This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Protocol for Life Balance product line at my online dispensary. Protocol for Life Balance offers a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, three stand out, which help maintain your healthy blood sugar: glucose management with berberine, glucose balance, and chromate. These botanical supplements can play an important role in proper insulin function, normal energy production, promotion of healthy body weight, and maintenance of healthy blood sugar levels that are already within the normal range. Their ingredients are backed up by solid scientific data. They're only available from healthcare practitioners, but they're available to you at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In. I am your host. I am Layla Mudin. I have a master's degree in nutrition and exercise. I'm a registered dietitian. I've been working with Dr. Hoffman since 2005, and we are still in practice together here in Midtown Manhattan. If you'd like to make an appointment, 212-779-1744, Grimaldi will set you up. If you'd like to email me with questions, email me to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Let me dive into microbiome. You know, this is really the tip of the iceberg with regard to where scientific research is on the study of the human microbiome. I know Dr. Stephen Gundry, you know, the doctor, the author of Plant Paradox. He talks about the danger of lectins. Very, very compelling book. It was a very good read. He talks about a holobiome. That's not just our microbiome. It's not just what's inside, and it's a holobiome. It's not just what's on our skin. We have microbiome of our skin and all of our orifices and internally and so forth. We have more bacteria cells of this microbiome, this flora, than we do cells of our own body. But if he says that if you could really see it through a microscope, we're walking around in a little bit of a cloud of dust. It's not an aura. And it reminds me of Pigpen on, you know, Charles Schulz's The Peanuts cartoon. Charlie Brown and Lucy and Linus and all of them. Remember Pigpen? Remember how he was always in a kind of cloud of dust? Well, Dr. Stephen Gundry also, I believe, describes it that way in his book, that where it's a holobiome, not just a microbiome. Isn't that interesting? So there's a lot of research going on. There will be many, many more years of research going on with regard to microbiome, because it could not just be what we eat that makes us fat, it's what it does to this flora in our gut that determines obesity or thinness or something. Because there have also been studies done on the microbiome of the obese and the slim, and doing fecal transplant between the two, and then the slim person would get the fecal transplant. I know most of this was a lot of mouse study, mice studies, rodent studies, not necessarily human studies. However, I believe the human studies are yet limited. But the fecal transplant, you know, from an obese mouse to a skinny mouse would then cause the skinny mouse to become obese, and vice versa. The microbiome, the fecal transplant from the slim mouse to the obese mouse, may cause that mouse to become slimmer. It's very interesting what's going on here. Besides using fecal transplant for inflammatory bowel disease, that's another one they've done in Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, but especially in Clostridium difficile. C. difficile is a type of bacteria involved in chronic diarrhea that's caused by antibiotic use. It's a side effect. And, you know, it's for those who've taken a round of antibiotics or lots of rounds of antibiotics and they didn't kind of quite get over the diarrhea that may be associated with antibiotic use. It's kind of become intractable, and a cause of that could be C. difficile, and fecal transplant has been shown to help remedy that. Besides taking other antibiotics to target that first, that would be done first. But let me talk about this particular study. A new study sheds light on diet quality and microbiome composition. And we know that a high-quality diet is linked to more beneficial bacteria, right? While a low-quality diet is associated with an increase in potentially harmful bacteria. And this is according to a new study by researchers at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. Now, you know, you've heard me say sugar, junk food feeds bad bacteria. You don't want this bad bacteria. Let me name one, Candida albicans. You know, an overgrowth of Candida, yeast overgrowth, this is not beneficial. It wreaks havoc with the immune system. It causes yeast infections. It can cause skin outbreaks of eczema, among other things, and so forth. It's not beneficial. You want beneficial bacteria, and you need to be able to feed that beneficial flora with a good, healthy diet, not sugar and a junky food diet. It is well established that diet influences health and disease, but the mechanisms underlying this effect are not fully understood. The researchers proposed that modifying the microbiome through diet may be part of a strategy to reduce the risk of chronic diseases. Agreed. I mean, if you're going to go on a healthy diet to feed your microbiome, that healthy diet is also not just helping your microbiome, it's helping you. You're getting your nutrition, you're getting you're fighting deficiencies of vitamins and minerals, you are eating well. If every morsel of food that goes in your mouth is nutrient dense and of good quality and is clean, you can expect good health from that, barring any other underlying issues, any other disease process, genetic disease process, or anything like that, or your environment, the air you're breathing, the water you're drinking. So in this study, rather than looking at individual diets, researchers focused on dietary patterns as defined by the Healthy Eating Index, the Healthy Eating Index 2005, and how they relate to the microbiome. So the HEI is the Healthy Eating Index. The team used next generation sequencing techniques to analyze the type and abundance of bacteria present in colonic mucosal biopsies. They took biopsies of the colon. The samples were obtained endoscopically from enrolled, consenting 50 to 75-year-old participants who had a colonoscopy at the Michael DeBakey Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Houston between the years 2013 and 2017. The participants did not have any polyps. They were polyp-free and seemingly healthy. They reported their dietary consumption using a food frequency questionnaire before the colonoscopy. Now, you've heard me criticize food frequency questionnaires in the past. It's true, because it's based on recall and also recall bias and also bias. There are people who want to fill these things out using the right answers, if I may say that. And people may be embarrassed or ashamed of their poor diet and answer differently on a food frequency questionnaire, an FFQ of this type. So it is notorious for that, of lying and of recall bias, and not everybody's going to remember what they ate over the course of the last 5 years. Really, think about that. But these FFQs are what is normally used in these types of prospective or cohort following studies, right? So there is a reliance on them, and you know, you have to take it with 2 grains of salt, maybe. Well, so they did this with these folks, and diet is considered a principal factor influencing the structure of the microbial community in the gut, which in turn significantly affects the ability of beneficial or harmful microbes to colonize it, right? You want a lot of good guys, good bacteria in your gut. It benefits the rest of the gut to populate it with more beneficial bacteria. But if you have a potentially harmful bacteria overgrowing, that could kind of beat out the good guys. Their army might be bigger. The bad guys' army may be bigger and stamp out the good guys. That's why you want a good diet and to keep your sugar intake to an absolute minimum. The human gut microbiome also influences nutrient uptake, synthesis of vitamins, energy harvest, chronic inflammation, carcinogen metabolism, and the body's immune and metabolic response, factors that can affect diet risk. Let me give you some examples. Biotin is created in the gut. Vitamin K is created in the gut. If you don't have a healthy gut, and that means if you don't have a healthy microbiome or good beneficial microbiota, good beneficial flora in your gut, you're not going to make these beneficial vitamins. This is vitamin synthesis. And a healthy gut influences nutrient uptake. A good healthy gut is going to be able to synthesize the food you eat, to assimilate, digest, absorb properly. It influences nutrient intake, and it harvests energy well, can reduce chronic inflammation, can inhibit carcinogen metabolism, and aids us in our immune response, not just our metabolic response, but our immune response. Listen, the GALT, G-A-L-T, that's gut-associated lymphoid tissue, GALT, gut-associated lymphoid tissue, 70 to 80% of our immune system is there in the GALT, which is in our gut. When they said good health begins in the colon, they were not kidding. One new contribution to this work, say the scientists, is that they looked at the microbiome associated with colonic mucosa. Most other studies of the human gut microbiome have used fecal samples. We looked at colon mucosal associated microbiome because we know that this microbiome is different from that in the fecal samples, and it is said to be more related to human immunity and the host microbiome interaction than the microbiome in fecal examples. I want to digress here. It's not a true digression. This may explain why. If you've ever had a stool test done, a stool analysis done, these are fecal samples that they're talking about. And what these scientists are saying is that in the fecal samples, it's not a real true picture of the microbiome as it would be in these gut mucosal biopsies. I would tend to agree with that because we interestingly see, or paradoxically see, in a very healthy individual with a very good working gut, you know, digestive system and everything, no complaints whatsoever, if they've had a stool sample for any reason, we paradoxically see that they don't have any beneficial bacteria. there. We're not seeing any lactobacillus species. We're not seeing any bifidobacteria. And it's like, why is it coming up zero? It could be that the fecal sample or the stool test is not a terrifically accurate picture. And this is the case that these scientists make in this study, which I appreciate. And I thought it was worth my digression there into something that I observe in many stool sample lab reports. It's like, wow, what's going on? You're fine, this and that, everything. But it's showing that you don't have any good probiotic bacteria there. What's going on? And they're taking probiotics. They're eating probiotic foods like lactobacillus fermented cabbage, lactobacillus fermented pickles, kimchi, all of those. They're even eating prebiotic foods like Jerusalem artichokes, leek, onions, almonds, garlic, all kinds of beautiful prebiotic foods. And not seeing it there, it could be that the stool test may not be as accurate in looking for the good microbiota. However, stool tests are still very accurate in showing microbiota that is not beneficial, that may be problematic, like Candida albicans, like Klebsiella. Klebsiella may be associated with inflammatory bowel disease, for one example. So stool analysis is still very beneficial, and it's beneficial in showing parasites and things of that nature, don't get me wrong. It's that the scientists mentioned in this particular study that it may not be the best test for what microbiota is present, and that's why they did these colonic mucosal biopsies. So coming back to this, these scientists found that a good quality diet, as the one recommended by the dietary guidelines for Americans, to be high in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low in added sugar, alcoholic beverages, and solid fats, is associated with higher abundance of beneficial bacteria as those with anti-inflammatory properties. Poor quality diet, on the other hand, is associated with more potentially pathogenic bacteria, such as Fusobacteria, which has been linked to colon cancer. The researchers propose that the effect diet has on the structure of bacterial communities in human colonic mucosa can lead to modifications of innate immunity, inflammation, and the risk of chronic diseases. The next step is to confirm the study findings in a larger study population. In addition, they want to investigate how bacterial products or metabolites, such as short-chain fatty acids or secondary bile acids, can modify tissue microenvironment into one that either inhibits or promotes tumor growth or development of other diseases. In addition, scientists are interested in investigating how the unfavorable gut microbiome in individuals consuming a poor diet would respond to a tailored dietary intervention using diet pre or probiotics, as previous studies have produced mixed results. Other factors, they say, such as aging, genetics, or certain medications also influence the risk of disease, but we can't modify them. Diet, on the other hand, can be modified and thus provides a strategy to develop a microbiome that promotes healthy living. We suggest that modifying the microbiome through diet may be part of a plan to reduce the risk of chronic diseases. This comes to you, by the way, from Catherine Rushlow of Integrative Practitioner. She writes some really good articles, and this is one of them. So it's important, you know, the study of the microbiome, the holobiome, all of that, it's important what we're finding out. And again, it's the tip of the iceberg. You've also heard us mention on, when I say us, I talk about Dr. Hoffman and myself. We've mentioned often on this podcast about the importance of good oral health and that using an alcohol-based mouthwash or even heavy alcohol consumption reduces that beneficial flora in the mouth. And that can adversely impact nitric oxide production, which is necessary for endothelial function, for vasodilation, for high blood pressure prevention, for normalizing blood pressure. Something like mouthwash, you wouldn't even consider it, right? But it alters the microbiome of the mouth enough to impact these things, to increase cardiovascular risk factors. So it's not just the microbiome of the gut. It's your oral cavity, it's oral health, skin. When we're using things like antibacterial products, please don't use anything. Don't use antibacterial soap or dishwashing liquid. None of your products should say antibacterial on it. You don't need that. It's the equivalent of taking antibiotics on your skin. You don't need that. You have beneficial bacteria on your skin that protects your skin from invading, you know, undesirable bacteria. Keep all of that in mind. So I look forward to more and more information on microbiome because it's such an interesting and exciting field of study, and so much of this is influenced by nutrition. Isn't it great that a large measure of your own health outcome is something completely within your control, and that is the food that you choose to eat? I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.